Right now, it's time for our Message in the Bottle, joined in studio by Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine & Cheese, 86 Hammond Street, Bangor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How's everybody doing?
Wonderful. Nice to have you here with us
today. Thank you. Yeah, it's I almost didn't make it. Traffic was a little iffy. Ooh. Yeah. Again, I got to figure out the perfect commute here from Thomas School of Dance downtown. There's a perfect route. I have yet to figure it out.
But you want the one that avoids the lights.
And where I can speed if I need to. If any of Bangor's finest police officers are listening, I didn't say speed. I said think as hard as I need this segment.
This time of day, your best to come up Kanduskeg Ave.
That's what I did.
Griffin Road. And Broadway? Really? You had trouble?
There's some people who don't understand haste. Mm. And it's okay. They're not in a rush.
Well, that is your best bet. There is no other better way
in.
To do
I'm
it.
I'm locked in on Kanduskeg.
You're not as bad as me, are you?
How bad are you?
I say like they can hear it, hoping they read my lips. I'm saying, I'm sorry you don't have any place to go.
Oh, that's the least of what I say. My greatest fear is all the things that my children have learned, all the words, the variety of. Well, that's okay. You know, it's good. It's a very good thing that we don't have those laser beams that I always say, man, if only I had a laser beam. Yeah, because I'd use it. I'd use it all the time.
I want that. I want signage that I can hold up when I go by people.
That too. Yeah. That would be, I would get in. There would be so much more accidents in quotes. Hey, here to talk about wine, though.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're going to talk about this this week, but I was reading it in the newsletter. It was pretty cool that you got a chance to visit with the guy who was kind of your mentor in the wine business, right?
It was. I went down to New Jersey a couple weeks back, and I actually the worst traffic of the entire trip was north of Augusta.
Of course,
of course it was. It was really cool. He's one of those. Sort of sitcom-y characters. He's got this great Burgundian accent, and he's just he starts every morning by picking at his socks, and that decides the rest of his wardrobe. I don't know what that says about the man, but I think it's a fabulous fun fact.
I like that.
Super cool guy, and as I said in the newsletter, he always reminds me to focus on what I really love, which is, you know, the geekiness of wine and all the little nuances that make it so special. And it was also fun because and I also ran into an old colleague of mine who recommended a given wine, a wine from a producer that we're actually going to drink one of their wines today. And we kind of had a chuckle because I was already carrying that wine. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So we're into February and we're talking about this week, purity in wine and wine agriculture and things like that. And it occurred to me as I laid awake at O Dark 30 last night, as I often do after one of my children has a nightmare, that a lot of people, you know, we talk a lot about purity and so many folks come in and, you know, so-and-so wants an organic wine or they need it to say organic. And we'll talk a lot about what all those things mean. But it occurred to me that not a lot of people really understand the life cycle of wine. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about the life cycle of a wine and, you know, kind of how it gets from the earth into your mouth. And then talk about, you know, the varying points along that cycle where, choices are made in terms of purity, right? And then we'll talk, you know, about how those choices are going to affect your decision and perhaps ultimately what you pay for that bottle and the availability of that wine. So we are in a climate, we were talking a little bit about when we were talking about Savage Oaks, about hybrid grapes, right? So hybrid grapes are designed for cooler weather and cooler climate regions like ours. So all you folks out there in radio land can grow your own grapes if you'd like to. And I started doing this just for the fun of it in my backyard. And if you go to, you know, any of the major hardware stores or agriculture stores, I suppose, or the Blue Seals of the world or things like that, very often they'll have some of these, you know, Cayuga and Concord and other grape varietals that you can buy, and they're already sort of pre-started, and you can put them in your backyard and watch them grow. So when things start to, you know, thaw and ripen, is when you start to see buds develop. Of course, you start to see buds develop in all sorts of plants, and it's no different in the vines. And that usually happens in, you know, May or June, depending on how atrocious a winter it's been. And that's when, of course, you start to worry about late frosts. And certainly, you know, that is something that can really, really damage an entire crop. Then gradually you'll start to see, you know, these little tendrils come out and leaves start to develop, and these little, you know, adorable little grapelings, as it were, that it's really quite funny. And they're all green, and, you know, there's no sign of red, if it's going to be a red grape or anything like that. It's all still very green. And slowly they grow and they grow, and the leaves start to sprout. And then sometimes, of course, you have to trim some of these leaves depending on whether or not they're overshading and things like that. And you don't want leaves touching the grapes, because then you can get mildew and things like that. And around about late August, sometimes into September, depending on where you're at in the terms of the whole ripening, you get what we call veraison or veraison, which is where you start to see the I'm assuming, you know, it's the truth in the grape, right? What it really is going to turn out to be. Is it going to be a slightly gray grape or a red grape? It starts to take on those hues and look almost like a grape that you expect, you know, from all the pictures of all the vineyards that you've ever seen. And then finally they do ripen and become, you know, the beautiful bunches of grapes. Hopefully, if you haven't incurred any of nature's wrath in terms of, again, any fungal rots or hail is really, really dangerous at that time of year, especially in that nasty September time when it can absolutely decimate entire crops and does on occasion. Something people don't really know about vines is that they don't really start producing quality fruit for a couple of years either. And so we talk about young vine and old vine fruit on this program quite a bit, but the stems of the grapevines themselves don't even really have enough girth to support bunches of viable grapes when they're very young. So you need to understand that when you plant a grapevine, even if you're doing this in your backyard, don't expect anything that you're going to be able to really harvest for a little while. It's going to take a while, and there's also a learning curve. Certainly there has been for me in terms of what you prune and how you prune and things like that. And I'm not going to get into that because, frankly, I don't know nearly enough. And there's people who absolutely know a ton. For instance, my friend down at Savage Oak. So if you want to, you know, pick up a tip or two, go visit them this summer on the main wine trail and ask either Holly or Elmer when and how they should prune their hybrid varietals. So that's basically, that's, you know, and then you get your harvest. And from there, the grapes are transported somehow and some distance, whether it's a short distance or a long distance, to a facility. It might be a very elegant, beautiful facility. It might be a warehouse-looking facility, especially in California. There's a lot of literal warehouse wineries. They're not pretty. They're not designed for tourism. They're designed to pump out mass amounts of mass-produced wine, and very often when you hear about, you know, transfers of very large wineries, they will come with, you know, a 70,000 foot facility, a bottling facility, and things like that that are also thrown in on the deal. And from there, yeah, the wine is fermented and made into wine, and then it's maybe aged there, or maybe it's put into bottle fairly quickly and sent out to the world. And there's a lot of steps along there where chemicals and things that, quote, aren't pure can come into the equation. So it's important for people to really understand that from the vineyard and from the soil where it's growing, and then it's harvested and it goes into a facility that is cleaned somehow. It's going to be made into wine that's put into bottles that were sanitized and made in some other facility. You don't really know what that facility is like. The cork comes from a tree that may or may not be treated organically. So it's important for folks to understand that even though the vineyard may be treated organically and it may be organic grapes, not everything along the way was necessarily chemical free. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because we do want cleanliness.
Yeah.
Or else you're going to end up with a bottle of funk. So we'll talk a little bit more about that going forward, but we need to drink before we end our segment. Today we're drinking Tinhoff. Tinhoff is imported by my friend Carlo Huber, who I had dinner with last week, and he was the importer who brought this in. Tinhoff is an Austrian producer. This is a sparkling rosé of Blaufränkisch. It is our wine of the week this week at Bangor Wine and Cheese, and it is 10% off, and that's going to be a continuing thing that we're going to have a wine of the week. Sign up for our newsletter and you'll find out what that wine of the week is.
And just stop in. Often say, drink more rosé.
Drink more rosé. It's super delicious. It's perfect for Valentine's Day. It's creamy. It's sexy.
Mm.
drink up.
I love it. This is very good. Tinhoff. I want to get the pronunciation.
Tinhoff. Yeah. You just pretend you're a kraut. And it's good. but absolutely excellent. And Austria, we'll hit Austria when we do the wine tour of the world again, because it's really fascinating. One of the only places, Vienna, one of the only places, in fact, the only place that I can think of in the world where vineyards are actually within the city limits. It's very ancient. It's very beautiful. And I hope we all get there someday.
Yeah, indeed.
But for now, be well.
Enjoy. Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor. Message in the Bottle. Every Tuesday, we'll have the whole interview, the whole segment up on the website as well.